So the talk today is on the chapter called The Power Responds to All Alike from Essential Earnest Homes. And Judy Oliver gave a fabulous talk on this subject 2 weeks ago, and she covered the aspects of the law, focusing your mind so that you stay focused on the positive outcome. And she told a fantastic story of buying a new house in a very short period of time and moving, even though she had a broken leg, and then selling her old house in a very short period of time and manifesting these huge, huge things in her life, which is so impressive. And I didn't have any stories. So I was thinking, oh boy, what am I going to talk about? I'm talking about the same chapter, and I haven't manifested anything huge in a very long time in my life. And how am I going to say anything about this that is meaningful? And so I went back and I reread the chapter. And I said, how can I approach this in a way that works for me, that will be reasonably credible, that I have, since I have no stories to share. And so I actually had two things happen to me over the last 2 weeks since Judy's talk that showed how magnificent I am at living these principles, but places where I sort of question my ability to do this and to perceive in a way that is the most positive. So I'm going to tell you those stories before I'm through, but I want to start out with the fact that something in this chapter was really meaningful to me, because for 30 years I have been remembering one of the things my very first Science of Mind minister taught. And she said it was a quote from Ernest Holmes. But honestly, in 30 years, I haven't seen that Ernest Holmes ever said it. But what Reverend Marianne said was, no one can tell you what is true for you except you. And that was profound for me when I walked into her church and she said that. Because people had been telling me what was true for me my whole life. And most of what they told me was true for me didn't resonate with me. But I felt sort of guilty rejecting all these people who theoretically knew better for me than I did what was right for me. And to walk into a philosophy that said, you get to choose. You get to figure it out. What resonates for you is true for you, whether it's true for anybody else or not. And in this chapter, he didn't exactly say that, but he said the same thing. He said, never let someone else decide what's good for you, because they do not know. Ask yourself if the desire or idea you have complies with the law of truth of righteousness. Does it partake of the nature of reality, with a capital R? If it does, then you can go to the limit with it. And so he said, check with yourself to see if it feels right, if it feels true with a capital T, knowing that wholeness and beauty and health and rightness is the truth. That's the true nature of reality. That's what he's saying. And if you feel in harmony with that, go forward. Go to the limit with it. And boy, that really was one of the things that drew me so powerfully to the Science of Mind. If somebody says, there is that within you that knows what's true and you can access it, then we are empowered to go forward in our lives in powerful ways and to live the truth. And Jim sang the Jim Croce song, I Got a Name, and in that he says, I've got a song and I'll sing it loud. If it gets me nowhere, I'll go there proud. And that's what Ernest Holmes is saying. Sing your song. Live it as clearly as you can and be proud of it, whether anybody else gets it or not. It doesn't matter if it gets you nowhere, because it gets you back to yourself and the authenticity of who you are. And who you are is God in expression. It's valuable. It's powerful. It's beautiful. It's great. Who you are is great. And so finding our way into the greatness is what we're looking for. So I was at Folk Club a week ago, Tuesday night. Yeah. And I was talking to a friend, and we were talking about our friend Holly, who has had a lot of physical issues. And he was mentioning that she's been resuscitated twice and all of this stuff. And I said, I take hope in the fact that she was resuscitated twice, because perhaps she's had a near-death experience and has a very expanded view of what her life is now than she had before. And that gives me hope and strength that when she regains consciousness, it's going to be an enlightening experience rather than a depressing experience that she's been through. And he got all excited and he said, there's this incredible website. And he was telling me about it. And I wrote down the website name, and I don't see where I wrote it. So somewhere I've got that website if you want to know what it is. Because it's a website that documents near-death experiences. And they get them from all over the world, and they list them. And he was showing me this listing of recent near-death experiences. And he said he goes there every week, and it's so inspiring to read about these near-death experiences. And I was excited that he was so excited about it. But I was thinking about it the following day, and I thought, I don't know why I'm not excited about it. Because years ago, I used to be really excited about near-death experiences, and I loved reading them, and I am continuing to be excited about the possibility of people having them. I think it's awesome when people have near-death experiences. But I wasn't eager to go to that website and read a whole lot of other people's near-death experiences. And so I was thinking about that. Why is that? That I didn't really want to spend a lot of time on that website. And I was reminded of a quote from Ernest Holmes that's in my book, Chatting with the Beloved. Ernest said that he encouraged everyone to experiment with spiritual experience. In Ideas of Power, page 108, he says, "The only prophetic thing that can happen to you and to me is not to just read what others have done, but somehow or other taking that as an example to do the same thing." So in addition to telling us that we can decide what's true for us, and we can continually incorporate our expanded understanding of what's true, he says, we're not here to worship other people's spiritual experiences. We're here to have spiritual experiences. We're here to live our truth. We're here to sing our song. We're here to understand our personal, unique connection to Source. And that really is inspiring to me, because I don't want to just read other mystics and figure out what they said and be excited about what they said. I want to be a mystic. And I believe I am a mystic. And in Science of Mind, What We Believe, he said, we believe in the direct revelation of truth through the power of mind. And he wrote us a book that said, can we talk to God? And the answer was yes. Emphatically, the answer was yes. We can talk to God the way we can talk to anybody else and expect an answer. And when I started talking to God, one of the things that came through really fast and early on was, you don't talk to us because you think we won't answer. You talk to us because you're afraid we will, and it scares the willies out of you. And to believe that there will be an answer means we have to ask and listen. And we have to be quiet enough to hear that still small voice. But everybody who's a mystic doesn't hear a still small voice. Some of the mystics have visual experiences. Some see visions. And the first book I wrote about my mystical experience is called A Gift of Vision, because what I saw at the beginning was images and video. And I had the experience of incorporating those things that I saw into my own life experiences. Because when I saw them, when I experienced it, it was real to me. It wasn't just something I read in a book that somebody was suggesting I believe. It was my truth. And in that truth, I feel confidence. I read what other people say and it inspires me, but I believe and I know what I've experienced. So that's where I get excited about the science of mind philosophy and the permission it gives us to go within and to experience our own powerful connection to Source. Because everybody has a powerful connection to Source. We are God expressing. There is no doubt that somewhere in there is a powerful connection. And so some people don't hear or see, some people just feel. They feel moved, they feel touched, they feel expanded, they feel illumined. Or they see the light, or they hear the harmony. They hear the voices of the celestial spheres. I mean, whatever it is that people experience it, when they have that feeling that what they're experiencing is true, whatever it is, it may be scientific endeavors that lead them to an expanded understanding. However we experience that knowing is right for us. We don't have to all be alike. We don't have to be like anybody else. We can be unique. Each of us has our own unique expression. David channels music. He plays for Evensong. He's going to play for Evensong tonight. And nobody plays music the way David does. And I often quote David as saying, there is only one song, and I've been playing it in variations of it since I was a kid. And to connect with that oneness and to bring it through, however we experience and express it, is perfect for us. And in this chapter, Jesse Jennings quotes Ernest in The Voice Celestial, the epic poem that he wrote with his brother Fenwick. They say, for the consciousness of God alone provides a way for mind to unify and synthesize all fields of knowledge where opposites converge to form a perfect round. Frictions disappear where harmony is found and love is key. That felt really powerful to me. Frictions disappear where harmony is found and love is the key. And then in another place, Ernest says in this book, thus a practitioner of the science should not be confused over any given form, but should know that any form which is not of the original harmony is subject to change. The original spirit is harmony. It is beauty and truth and everything that goes with ultimate reality. The universe is not divided against itself. We should learn to control our thought processes and bring them into line with reality. Thought should tend more and more toward an affirmative attitude of mind that is positive, stable, and above all else toward a real unity with spirit that is already complete and perfect. Already complete and perfect. And so day to day over the last month since Holly's emergency open heart surgery, I've been doing my best to see her as complete and perfect and to know that all is well with her. Regardless of the appearance, all is well. And this morning I wrote a message to her husband because he was saying that he's discouraged. He's tired of waiting for the results that he's looking for, and they were waiting for yet another test And he was saying, it's so hard to wait. And I sent him a message that I hope will be inspiring to him, because it's what it's inspiring to me right now. I told him of a story that I had read. I honestly don't remember if it was Bruce Lipton's book or Joseph Chilton Pierce, but it was one of those guys that study the science of the mind from a medical physical perspective. And they told a story of a study that was being done on postmortem autopsies of the brains of nuns to see the impact of the power of prayer and the power of being in a place where spirit is spoken here, where you immerse your life in spirit. And there was this one nun who lived to be in her mid-90s, and she taught elementary school to the end, and she was sharp as a tack. And they were really interested to see what the pathology report would be on the autopsy of her brain. And what they discovered is that her brain looked like it had advanced Alzheimer's disease. But her physical experience and reality was that she was sharp as a tack into her mid-90s. And so that what can be observed is not necessarily the truth. It is not the revealing of the wholeness. And in Anatomy of Healing Prayer, one of my favorite quotes from Ernest, which is not even a quote, it's a paraphrase because it's a whole paragraph. But what he said was, there is nothing to be disintegrated or reintegrated. There is only that to be revealed which has always been whole. So we focus on the wholeness, and we know that whatever the conditions, whatever the appearances, the wholeness always exists. The wholeness always exists. We have that opportunity to return to our awareness of the harmony and the love and the peace and the wholeness and the grace, no matter what, and not to be confused by what we're observing. Because what we're observing is not necessarily true. And that brings me to my second very silly story of what happened in this past week. Because one day I was having lunch at Costco with my friend Doug after we walked for 3 miles. And I was sitting there, and he was describing to me something he was seeing. And he wanted me to see it. And I was looking as hard as I could look, and I could not see it. Because he was talking about, it's right over there where the Parmesan cheese is. And I'm thinking, Parmesan cheese? I've been to Costco 3,000 times, and I have never seen Parmesan cheese in the area where there's lunch. You know, where you can get a salad or a hot dog or a piece of pizza. And he's saying, it's right over there, and he's pointing, right over there, excuse me for pointing at you, right over there by the Parmesan cheese. And I was looking for this. I thought a big, some kind of thing that has a grate in the top, you sprinkle Parmesan cheese. I couldn't see what he was pointing at, because what was there was this. It was brown bins of little packets that included Parmesan cheese. But I was looking for some kind of rack that had this, the grated cheese in the glass or plastic bottle that you sprinkle on your food. It was right there all the time. It has been there for the 20 years I've been going to Costco, but I couldn't see it. And it was laughable because he was describing and pointing, and he's saying it's right next to the silverware, which is plastic. It's not silver, but I couldn't see it. You know, there were brown bins filled with little packets. I was looking for something different. And so you can't find what you believe to be different. You can't see it. Abraham Hicks often tells the story about you can't find something that's lost, because your perception of it is that it's lust. So even if it's right there, you can't see it. And that was revealing to me this week, because it's about perception. Unless I can perceive it in some way, unless I can believe it in some way, I can't perceive it. And I actually took a special trip to Costco on a Saturday yesterday to get you this little prop to show you the difference between what I was looking for that sits in my fridge and what Costco was offering that was a little packet. So that's the value of other people's experience, because sometimes they can see something we can't see. And Ernest Holmes saw a whole lot that I didn't see before I met him, and all of the wonderful ministers and teachers who taught me as I went through my practitioner training, and all of the books that I've read, and all of the experiences that I've had over these years. So that brings me to the other things I wanted to share in this talk, because Ernest in this chapter talked about the love and the harmony. And the title of the chapter is "The Power Responds to All Alike." But Ernest focused in the Voice Celestial on the love. Where harmony is found and love is key. So I went back to what I know about love, and that I know that the love responds to all equally as well. There is no difference. And so I went to my own books, because I've written 4 books on how love responds to us, Chatting with the Beloved's books. And here's my conversation with the Beloved about this subject. I said, "I've been thinking about the idea that the law treats everyone equally, that we get back more of what we focus on. And I can see that your love is also equally offered to everyone, unconditionally, and with absolute respect for our free will. There's more, though, Beloved. I can feel it, and you've alluded to it. There's something about your love that's also unique to each of us. Please tell me more." And they said, "We love that you continue to ponder the both and of life, both slash and, not either or. There is always a universal and an individual perspective to human life. We love you utterly, absolutely, and essentially. The love that we are is the love that you are, that everyone is." And I quoted them back to them and said, "No one excluded or set to the side. Each one supported, loved, and supplied." And they said, "We love that you love quoting us. We endlessly, powerfully, and perfectly support, love, and supply you all. The degree to which you experience our love and our support is the degree to which you are able to perceive it. You are always totally supplied with your good. You are ever in the process of opening to and allowing your good to flow. Your good is infinite. You will never exhaust or deplete it." And I said, "So I need to learn to perceive my good, accept it, and allow it." And they said, "As you accept it and allow it, you will perceive it." And I said, "So how do I open to it?" And they said, "You start by understanding that we are always supplying you." So the understanding comes first. And they said, "Feel our love. The clearer you get about that, the more you relax in a deep state of trust. When you relax, your vision clears and you perceive what's really here for you more fully." So when we are tense, when we are fighting against things, we are in resistance to perceiving the good that's already here. The Parmesan cheese may be right there, but we can't see it. And so when we relax and we let all of this information in, the information from the inside, from spirit, the information from the outside, from our friends sitting next to us to see what we don't see. And I said, The law treats us all alike, but it feels to me that the love also responds to us uniquely. And they said, you are right. Both the law and the love respond to you all alike, and also uniquely. That's the confusing part at first, which becomes thrilling as you understand it better. By law of attraction, we perfectly reflect back to you an exact vibrational match to what you are thinking. This is identically true across the board. But you choose what you think, and each one of you chooses a unique blend of thoughts. So the results each one gets look different. Similarly, we orchestrate supply for you based on your vibration. We can't give you higher frequency results in response to low frequency thoughts. We can and do arrange for each the maximum benefit that you can accept. So if we want a higher frequency result, we have to think higher frequency thoughts. And we can get higher frequency thoughts from the inside, like I did when I was writing these books, or we can get them from reading Ernest Holmes and other amazing teachers, or listening to our talks on the website. I love that we've had testimonials to the value of that today. I think we have extraordinary opportunities to begin to understand, which results in the change of what we believe, which results in the change of what we perceive, which results in a differing experience. So one after another, each gentle step along the way, we open ourselves to a more expansive experience of life, to a more powerful experience that lets us know that we have a song and that we can sing it loud. And it will take us everywhere we want to go, because it may not bring us recognition from the outside world, but it will bring us harmony and wholeness within ourselves. And that's what we're here to do. We don't have to prove it to anybody. We can just relax and know our own truth and sing our own song. And so it is.
So it is.